Okay, so we're diving in today and looking at some fascinating stuff you've sent over,
Yeah.
specifically the Lex Plug podcast and a case called Protectors Insurance Service versus USF&G.
Okay.
And it seems like what we're really trying to get at here is how contract law grapples with this whole issue of damage calculations.
Right.
You know, when a business is actually sold off after a breach has occurred,
Yes.
we've got a few things to work with here, right? We've got some insights from the podcast itself. We've got a really detailed case brief, and we've got a standard brief of the 10th Circuit decision. So this is going to be a deep dive, folks, into a concept that's absolutely crucial, and that is avoiding double recovery in contract law.
Yeah.
It's a principle that anyone who's going to be dealing with commercial litigation really has to have a solid grasp of.
And it's a principle that really gets at, I think, fairness,
Right.
trying to avoid, unjust enrichment on the part of any party involved in a contract dispute. And so
Yeah.
this Protectors Insurance case really, I think, gives us a great example of how courts are looking at this idea of damages
Right.
when a business is sold.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's set the scene, right? Let's get everybody on the same page. So we've got Protectors Insurance Service.
Okay.
And as I understand it, this was an insurance agency, and they had a very, I would say, significant relationship with USF&G.
Yeah, huge.
Huge, right? I mean, we're talking over 80%.
80% of their business.
Of their business was coming from USF&G between 1979 and 1992.
Right.
So that's, I mean, in the business world, that's putting a lot of eggs in one basket, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. And that's the thing about this case, is it creates this sort of inherent vulnerability. Because, when your primary relationship is threatened, the entire business is really at risk.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened in 1992. USF&G, citing some concerns about profitability, they put Protectors on what they called a rehabilitation program, right?
Yep.
With these pretty specific performance targets. And then they upped the ante even further. They threatened to terminate their entire personal lines contract, if these targets weren't met by the end of that year. So, I mean, you can imagine that was a lot of pressure on
Oh
Protectors.
yeah. I mean, this is the situation where, they're facing potentially losing their main source of revenue.
Right.
So the owner of Protectors makes a decision, decides to sell all of the agency's assets. And this is in January of 1993 to Centennial Agency.
Inc. Okay.
And they sell it for just over $148,000.
Okay.
Now, Protectors claims that this was a distressed price,
Right.
that they were forced to sell quickly and for much less than what the business was really worth.
And this is where it gets really interesting, right?
This is where the lawsuit begins.
Yeah, because Protectors, they don't just walk away, right? They turn around and they sue USF&G for breach of contract. And their argument is essentially that USF&G failed to make a good faith effort to avoid terminating this agreement, which, according to Protectors, they were obligated to do under the contract.
Yeah, and you can kind of see what Protectors is trying to do here. That their argument is basically, USF&G's actions forced them into this fire sale. They had to get rid of the business at a much lower price than what it was actually worth.
Right. And then the plot thickens,
Oh,
right?
yeah.
Because the case goes to trial and the jury comes back with a decision that's actually, it's kind of a mixed bag, I guess you could say.
Yeah, it's interesting.
They award Protectors two different types of damages. So they award them $35,000, which the jury determined was the difference between that $148,000 sale price, right?
Right.
And what they considered to be the fair market value of those assets.
Okay.
But then on top of that, they also award a much larger sum, $809,650 for lost future profits. So you can kind of already see where the problem might be here.
Yeah, you're starting to get, this idea that maybe they're being compensated twice for the same thing.
Exactly. And this is exactly why USF&G decided to appeal, right?
Hmm.
Their central argument was that giving both of these, the diminished sale value and these substantial future profits, it was a double recovery.
Right.
Like, it wasn't permissible.
Yeah, they're essentially arguing that Protectors is getting more than they should have received.
Yeah, they're being made more than whole, right?
Exactly.
And that brings us to the crux of the matter, right? This key question that the 10th Circuit had to grapple with:
Right.
could Protectors recover twice for what was, essentially the same underlying damage, the loss of the business's value because of USF&G's alleged breach?
Yeah.
And the court ultimately said no. But the reasoning behind that now is really, really important, I think, for understanding this whole area of contract law.
Well, and it gets at that fundamental principle of contract law, which is that damages are designed to make the injured party whole.
Right.
It's not about punishing the party that breached the contract, right?
Right.
It's about putting the injured party back in the position they would have been had the contract been performed.
Right, right. And this is where I think this idea of going concern value comes into play.
Exactly.
The court really emphasized that when you're talking about the value of a business, you know, especially one that's sold as a, you know, complete entity,
right,
that value inherently includes its potential for future profits. It's not just about the physical stuff, right? The desks and the chairs or whatever.
Yeah, the tangible assets.
It's about the actual operation. It's about the customer base, right?
It's the goodwill, the brand recognition, all of that's baked into that value.
Exactly.
When you buy a business, you're not just buying, you know, a collection of stuff. You're buying the potential to generate future income.
Right.
And that's a key factor in determining the price a buyer is willing to pay.
Absolutely. And you know, what's really interesting in the case of Protectors is that their own expert witness,
right,
actually testified that the $35,000 difference between the sale price and the fair market value, that difference represented the lost value of the business as a going concern.
Exactly. So that $35,000 already factored in,
right,
the idea that, you know, the future earnings of the business were going to be diminished because of USF&G's actions.
Right, right. So it's like they've already taken that hit.
Right.
So to then give them that $35,000 and then to tack on an additional $809,650 for lost future profits, the court is saying, look, you're essentially compensating them twice for the same economic harm.
Yeah, you can't give them, you know, the $35,000, which is supposed to account for the lower sale price,
mm-hmm,
and then also the $809,000, which is also for that same loss of future earning potential.
And the court, to really hammer this point home, they use a really interesting analogy.
Right.
The injured racehorse analogy.
Yeah, this is a classic.
Can you kind of break that down for fun?
Sure. So imagine you have a racehorse.
Okay.
It's a very valuable racehorse.
Mm-hmm.
But it gets injured.
Okay.
And the injury is because of, you know, somebody else's negligence, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this injury means that the horse can't race as well, right? Mm-hmm. So it can't win as much prize money in the future.
Right.
So the owner decides, okay, well, I'm going to sell this horse, but I'm going to sell it for a lower price,
mm-hmm,
because it can't win as much money anymore.
Right. It's damaged goods, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, the court says you can't sell that horse for a lower price and then sue the person who injured the horse for the prize money that the horse would have won if it hadn't been injured.
Right.
Because you already accounted for that loss of future earnings.
You already took that into consideration when you sold it, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing that's going on here with Protectors. The reduced sale price of the business already reflects the fact that it's not going to earn as much in the future.
It's so clear, right?
Yeah.
That analogy, it really just drives the point home. You don't get to have your cake and eat it too.
Right. You can't recover twice for the same loss.
And this case, I think, really highlights the fact that when a business is sold after a breach of contract, the injured party, they essentially have two options, right?
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to calculating damages.
Two paths,
exactly. So they can try to recover the difference in that going concern value, right?
Right. So what the business was worth before the breach minus what they actually sold it for.
Exactly. Or they can try to prove those lost future profits that they would have earned if they had just, you know, kept a business going.
Right.
But as the court made clear, they can't do both.
No, and that's the real takeaway here, is that they're alternative measures of damages.
Right.
Not cumulative.
Right. They can't just like stack them on top of each other.
Exactly.
So what does all this mean for, you know, folks listening out there, especially for RSI hiring attorneys? What are the practical implications of this decision?
I think, you know, for any lawyer involved in contract disputes, particularly those involving the sale of a business after a breach, this case provides a really important lesson in how to approach damages.
Hmm.
If your client has sold their business following a breach, your focus should really be on establishing that fair market value, what the business was worth before the breach, and then compare that to what they actually received in the sale.
Right.
Right. And that difference is going to represent the loss of the going concern value. Trying to add on a separate claim for lost future profits is risky.
Yeah, that's kind of playing with fire, isn't it?
It is. And as Protectors Insurance shows, it's likely to be seen as an attempt at double recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And you might even get that part of your claim dismissed on appeal.
You're really driving home the point that you need a clear and consistent theory of damages, right?
Absolutely. You need to have your story straight.
Yeah.
You know, you can't be seeking compensation for the same harm twice.
And the Tenth Circuit, they did touch on a very subtle point here.
Mm.
they kind of hinted at some potential exceptions, right?
Right.
They mentioned that if pet hectors could have shown lost profits that were completely separate from the business they sold and the USF&G contract, you know, those might have been recoverable. Can you unpack that a little bit?
Yeah, and this is where it gets into this idea of how direct the damages are, right? What the court's saying here is if protectors had, you know, some completely unrelated line of business or maybe some independent contracts that were also negatively impacted by USF&G's actions.
Okay.
But those losses weren't reflected in the sale of the insurance agency itself, then maybe those could be recoverable. But, you know, in this case, protectors' main business, you know, their future profits were so tied to USF&G that the sale of the business already accounted for those earnings. They didn't really have any evidence of these truly independent lost profits.
And that's where the burden of proof, you know, really comes into play, right?
Yes, the plaintiff has to show that any lost profits they're claiming are actually separate and haven't already been included in the value of the business.
So this whole discussion really, I think, brings us back to a very fundamental principle in contract law.
Right.
And that is the benefit of the bargain principle.
Yes.
Right? The idea is to put the injured party in the same financial spot they would have been in if the contract had been followed.
Right.
Not to make them better off.
Right. You don't get a windfall.
Yeah.
It's about making you whole.
Exactly. Right?
Putting you in a better position.
And this protector's insurance case, it really, really underscores this, doesn't it?
It does. It prevents them from getting, you know, more than they would have had if the contract had been performed.
Right. Right. It's like the court is stepping in and saying, hold on, let's be reasonable here.
Yeah.
And this case also, I think, highlights the role of the courts as a gatekeeper, right?
Absolutely. They're not just rubber stamping jury awards.
Right.
They're looking at the law, they're looking at the economic principles, and they're making sure that the damages make sense.
That they're sound.
Yeah, that they're fair.
That they're fair, that there's no, you know, unjust enrichment happening.
Right. They're making sure nobody's getting a windfall.
Yeah. And the Tenth Circuit's holding here was pretty decisive, wasn't it?
It was. They vacated that $809,650 award for lost profits.
Right.
They upheld a $35,000 award for the difference in sale value.
Okay.
So in a nutshell, what they're saying is, you know, when a business is sold after a breach, that fair market value that's established in the sale, that's generally the main way to measure damages related to the loss of future earnings.
Right. And I think the key takeaway for our listeners today is this. When a business is sold after a breach, the fair market value, what someone's willing to pay for it out there in the market,
right,
that already includes the future profit potential.
It does.
Right. So you can't get both. You can't get the reduced sale value.
Right.
And then also get compensated separately for those lost future profits.
Exactly.
In this case, Protectors Insurance Service v. USF&G, it really stresses the importance of thinking carefully about how you structure your damage claims, right? And understanding what a going concern actually is.
Yeah, and understanding how courts are going to look at these things.
Right.
And try to make sure that damages are fair and equitable.
Right. And for all of our law students out there who are, you know, working their way through the complexities of contract law.
Yeah.
This case serves as a very, very, very important reminder that the goal of contract damages is to make the injured party whole.
To make them whole.
It's not to give them a bonus, right?
Right.
It's not to punish the breaching party.
Exactly.
It's to make them whole. And that's, I think, a really, really important distinction to keep in mind. Now, I want to leave you all with something to think about.
Okay.
In today's economy.
Right.
We've got all these mergers and acquisitions happening.
All the time.
Businesses are constantly being bought and sold.
Right.
And, you know, contracts are being breached.
Happens all the time.
How might this principle we've been talking about apply to, let's say, a startup, right?
Yeah.
A company that has huge potential, you know, sky's the limit, but maybe they don't have a lot of assets yet.
Right. They're not profitable yet. Necessarily.
Exactly.
Yeah.
How do you even begin to put a value on something like that?
Right.
If a breach occurs.
Yeah. How do you measure those lost future profits?
Yeah.
It's a really interesting question.
It is. It is. So that's something to kind of, you know, mill over as you, you know, continue your studies and your legal journey.
A lot to think about.
A lot to think about. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been a really fascinating deep dive.
My pleasure.
And we'll see you all next time.
See you later.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.